Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody, for a very, very special podcast here this evening of September 15th. I'm Chad Sherwood, the host up here. A couple of Hoops HD regulars and David Griggs over there, Zach below him, and our very special guest tonight.
I'm here every week.
Associate Athletic Director at Oklahoma State, former head coach with Southern Illinois, Missouri State, Oral Roberts, and creator of the legendary Barry Hinson barbecue sauce, among other things, which we've had on the show before. Coach Hinson, great to have you on. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Oh, you guys, it's great. Matter of fact, David looks like my first girlfriend in junior high. Little woolly and probably more hair on that woman than what's on that wool sock. So this is a good day for me.
All right. Yeah. I'm glad to bring back the memories. Yeah, my first girlfriend in junior high was also more hairy than I was. She at least had arms, though. Well, which I don't. So it made it kind of.
But
obviously, I have comment on any hair related things for reasons that are very apparent to anybody with two eyes. So.
I remember when Zach had hair.
Wow.
But first of all, Barry, you're now associate athletic director, correct, at Oklahoma State. So how are things going there? That's my first question to you.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, associate athletic director, that's a lot of big words for a guy from Marlow, Oklahoma. But, you know, I tell you what, everybody asks me, what's it like to be in the NIL director? And this is the best way I can explain it. Everybody, for the most part, has seen the movie Gladiator. And when Russell Crowe is sitting there behind the gate and everybody's cheering him, and when you get in the middle of the arena, then everybody just tries to start kicking his ass. That's what it's like being an NIL director. That's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah, that's a rather new role, not just for you, but for in existence. You know, 14 months ago, or however long it was, NIL wasn't really a thing. So aside from feeling like you're getting your ass kicked every day after people are cheering for it, how's it going and kind of what do you do?
Well, to be honest, it has really gone well because, you know, when they offered me the job, I told them no. Matter of fact, I think I put an adjective in front of the no part. I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to be a fundraiser. And they told me, we don't want you to be a fundraiser. We want you to educate people on the NIL, and we want you to promote Oklahoma State University, and we really want you to help student athletes. And to be quite frank, that's kind of what I've done my entire life, is promote wherever I've been and help student athletes. 33% of it I hadn't done, and that was educate people on NIL, and I couldn't do it until I educated myself. And once I did, and I figured it out, I thought, you know what, this isn't going away. We're going to have to adapt. I do think parameters will be coming in the future. I think there'll be some guardrails. But in the meantime, it's an opportunity for us to help student athletes that the NCAA refused to do, literally starting all the way back to 1995. And thank goodness we had a guy named Ed O'Bannon that challenged that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a good thing for our student athletes. I really do.
Yeah. And the NIL, in effect, college football this year, very much unaffected, unless you think for some reason the games have sucked and the crowd has sucked and the ratings have gone down. This myth that if you took away the indentured servitude model that was in existence since the 1950s, the popularity of the sport would wane, seems to have been misguided.
I think you've just pulled a word out from history, indentured servitude, that I'm going to use that quite often because you're exactly right. And that's probably one of the most intelligent things that have been said about the past and how these student athletes were treated. And to come from a sock puppet, that really just elevates my respect for you at this point in time.
Right. Well, sometimes when I'm sober, I come up with stuff. Most of the times I don't know what the hell I'm saying.
Well, you and I have a lot in common.
Yeah.
Really elevated the respect for the sock puppet. I mean, we were functioning on a pretty low bar there.
He just raised his street cred a whole bunch.
You know, you have a lot of street cred yourself, given you've had a legitimately an incredible coaching career, but now you're at, I know you in the past served, you had a role at Kansas. Now you're back in Big 12 with Oklahoma State. Can you talk about the differences, obviously, in terms of institutional like staffing support? I know you're in a new role, but like what it's like going from your experience in the Missouri Valley Conference to going back to the Big 12, where there's, you know, the love the Missouri Valley Conference, but in terms of, you know, attention and money sloshing around and stuff like that, what's it like being kind of in at like such a big school now?
Well, I think you can basically relay that to what's it like being at a Power Five compared to a mid-major. And when you're at a Power Five, you have college football, obviously, and the power of the conference to do a lot of things for you financially that you don't have those opportunities at the mid-major level. The one thing that I always thought about is we tried to find out what recruits and their parents really wanted in their experience at the Division I level. And we had to find those and adapt those at the mid-major level. You really don't have to do that at the Power Five. The challenges that you have at the Power Five now are simply the biggest thing, because money is so big that if you don't win and you don't win immediately and quickly, and they'll pull a Scott Frost on you in a heartbeat, and your ass will be out of there, and they don't really worry about your contract. So that's one of the things that's really changed in the Power Five. Whereas the mid-major, they used to have a little bit of patience. That has trickled down from the Power Fives to the mid-majors, and there's not a lot of patience right now. But I will make a bold statement here, and I believe this. I think it'll be very difficult for college coaches to stay at the mid-major level for a long time. I was fortunate enough to have, I don't even know what it, I know it was over 300 wins at the mid-major level. I don't think today a guy starting at the mid-major level right now will have an opportunity to win over 320 ball games because of the transfer portal and what's happened to college basketball. I think those days are long and far between, far away. And I'll be shocked if any coach, other than a guy, maybe the guy that would come to my mind right now is Greg Kempe at Oakland, because he's been there, you know, for so many years. But if you find a guy that just decides he wants to be at the mid-major level, spend his entire career there, maybe that would happen. But for fan bases to put up with any type of, I don't even want to say losing seasons, because at Missouri State, we proved that. We won 8 out of 9 years, and mm-hmm. we had 3 of the top 5 RPIs never get in the NCAA tournament, and they still fired my ass because we didn't go to the NCAA. And the same thing for SIU as well. You know, our last 4 years, we went 3rd, 2nd, 4th, 3rd, I believe, and, you know, it's just not good enough. And mid-major programs, as well as anybody, the fans, are really going to have to change their attitudes if they indeed want to keep a coach and to keep a program solid as much as they can.
Yeah. You mentioned something. We have been doing this not necessarily on the internet, but as a group of friends for a while. And I still think we all agree, not to bring up a bad memory, that the 2006 non-selection of Missouri State was the worst committee decision ever. I'm sorry that happened, and I'm sorry to bring up a bad memory, but moving on to something else you said now.
You know. Yeah, I thought it was bad for me as a UConn fan that they took George Mason, but it impacted you much more directly. Yeah. And your I'll say this before he moves on, Griggs, your firing at Missouri State and Southern Illinois are two of the greatest complete ridiculous decisions I've ever seen. I mean, you had the misfortune of being at two schools that had great runs 30 years ago, and the fans think that's the way it's supposed to go. You had an amazing career, and I thought it was really, I love that you have this gig now, because I thought it was really disrespectful what they did to you in both those cases.
Well, I think, you know, Southern Illinois, you kind of got up into a political deal. Missouri State, when you look back on it, you know, they had not been to the NCAA tournament in 9 years. And you can only say that it's someone else's fault for so long, but that's just part of it. I was a victim, I think, more so of the system than anything. But at Southern Illinois, I have no problem saying that I thought it was a political deal. I cannot even begin to tell you. I can't even count on one hand how many athletic directors, chancellors, and presidents I had. You'd have to have another set of hands or one more sock puppet to count the number of people that had with the administration while I was there. And Jerry Kill was the athletic director there at the time. And Jerry Kill was the guy that fired me, but he didn't fire me. And I think the world of Jerry Kill, I love him to death. And he was just given a message from someone else. And that person is no longer there anymore. And I don't wish any ill will on either Missouri State or Southern Illinois. Brian Mullins is going to be a heck of a coach. I hope they give him time. Here he is in year four. And it goes back to my philosophy, what I said, how patient will they be? He's a good basketball coach. They need to stay patient with him. They need to be connected, and he'll do a good job if they allow him. Wasn't Brian's fault that I got fired, and I would have done the same thing. And Brian brings a great, tradition-rich throwback to what you just talked about. But those days for mid-majors are going to be really hard.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard now because we're in the situation where, you know, you get a great team and a great player, and the first thing that's going to happen that you have to, I can't imagine what it's like being a mid-major coach, especially now when you're just waiting to see if your kid jumps in the portal. Cause it is, you know, so
it's funny you bring that up. I just spoke to every athletic director president from the Oklahoma junior colleges and the Arkansas junior colleges, literally two mornings ago. And I told one of the junior college coaches, if I were a mid-major coach today, I don't think that I would recruit a high school player unless he was a local kid that really wanted to stay local. The only thing I'm going to recruit are juniors, college players, and I'm going to try to go through the transfer portal because I am not going to be a farm club system. Most junior college players really only have about a year and a half success, and their first year is really an adaptive mode. So I do think for most mid-major coaches right now, to me, that would be the landscape that you'd want to look in the roadmap for success.
Yeah, the most recent example of this is St. Peter's, the run of the Elite Eight. They could have, in theory, returned their top six players. As a result, they lost all of them. And part of me, we like the mid-majors. We actually have another term for them. We call them under-the-radar teams. But that's sort of where a lot of our hearts and supports go to. And you kind of hate the idea that what was a media darling for about 10 days in March could have carried that into this year had they stayed together, but didn't. And you're right. Like, what you're tasked with is being a victim of your success at the mid-major under the radar level, because you basically have to re-recruit your key players to keep them there. And if you don't get them, then you're sort of rebuilding your entire roster in the months of April and May. And they lost everybody. They lost their coach. They lost their top six players. What are they going to do to build on what they did last year? And that's kind of becoming the norm at that level now.
Well, and I think the new norm needs to be guys like me that have been at that level.
Yeah.
Duke's podcast, specifically with sock puppets.
Yes, yes.
And that we talk about this because, in all honesty, and no humor involved in this at all, fans need to be educated. And we live in a society right now where educating somebody is, you know, it's few and far between. That's hard to do. But if you want to have a great mid-major program right now, your administration needs to have patience. They need to understand that cyclical, regardless of who you are, is going to attack your program. And you need to really put a lot of emphasis on junior college players in the transfer portal and back off of a coach that tries to do it that way, because that is really the only way you can have success. And then, you know, that's literally my opinion only.
Well, and it might have been the case years ago where you've got two or three spots that have opened on the roster from seniors graduating. You have to recruit two or three people every year. We're now in a situation where the coaches have to recruit half to three quarters of their team every single year with everyone going in and out through the transfer portal.
Yeah. And I tell you one thing that I think will change, and I'll make a prediction here. Now that the NIL is up and going, I think most colleges, most head coaches are going to make sure that player 1 through 8, because if you look at the rosters at the end of the season, rarely do you see teams that play more than 8 players in double-figure minutes on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
If I were a head coach again, whether it was at the mid-major or the high-major level, if I was back into coaching, I would tell you I would not even carry 12 and 13. I wouldn't even do that. I'd carry 11 guys on scholarship. That's it. And the 3 beyond 8 are the 4, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever it is, those guys would be for injury, sickness, suspension, to replace those guys in the top 8. I think what you're going to find out is that coaches will take the NIL, whether it be from the collective or the directive, and they'll make sure numbers 1 through 8 are happy. And they really won't be concerned with 9 through 13 because they can always replace those guys. And I'm not saying that in a negative factor. They will care about them, but 9 through 13 better accept their role. And I really believe it's a lot easier to keep 11 guys happier than it is 13. I would not carry 13 ever again on scholarship if I were a coach.
Well, let me ask this. You mentioned the NIL, and I'm looking at, like, heading into this year where you saw the player of the year, Oscar Tshiebwe from Kentucky, coming back again this year, not going pro, Drew Timmy at Gonzaga, not going pro. Do you think that maybe we're going to see through this NIL more players maybe staying an extra year or two, especially if they think they have a shot at a championship, because you now are getting paid, and maybe that can have a reverse negative, actually have a very positive effect on the game and getting us more talented players staying longer.
No, I think there's some validity to that. From the other side, let me speak about Oscar a little bit. Drew's a little bit of an enigma, but let's go back right now and let's talk about what the NBA wants. The NBA wants athleticism. They want length. And more than anything else right now, they want skill. So Oscar, in order for him to play at the NBA level, he has really got to be unbelievable at one thing, which he is unbelievable at several things, but very few of those are facing the basket. One more year at Kentucky, one more year with Coach Calipari will obviously elevate those chances for him. Now, Drew's a little bit different, probably a little bit more condition, a little bit more time in the weight room, but his skill level has gotten a lot better as well. But when you look at, the last NBA game I went to, the five man was shooting three pointers from three steps in from half court, and everybody thought it was okay because he could make them. So the back to the basket players are the dinosaurs now of college basketball and NBA because the game has changed so much. If you can't pass, dribble, and shoot, you better be the best defender ever or the best rebounder ever, because that's the only way that you can find a niche in the NBA without those three niches.
Yeah. Barry, like, one of the things you talk about moving on to the NBA, I believe that there's more players that play in the Final Four every year than what sign NBA contracts. We're talking about a very small percentage of players, but close to half, if not more than half, of all D1, all the way down to the SWAC, end up playing professional basketball somewhere in the world. I guess my observation is a lot of players have the chance to play overseas, but yet they themselves have never been overseas. They're not familiar with those particular leagues. Some of them might not even be able to find some of those countries on a map, yet that's where they're going to play. You've sort of been at both the mid-major level and the power level. How do you think? Do you think schools do a good job preparing them for that? Do you think that should be maybe something of a point of emphasis that the NCAA says, "Hey, you need to kind of prepare these guys for what's next," or is it just something to not worry about at all, or what?
Well, David, here's the deal. I've worked for two head coaches at the collegiate level in my lifetime, and one's in the Hall of Fame, and one of them, could certainly be tracking to the Hall of Fame, and Coach Boynton. But I also would like to think that, along with myself and my staff, in the 18 years that I was a head coach, that we did prepare young men for that. Yeah. We had several players. Blake Ahern is, a kid that played for me at Missouri State, Southwest Missouri State, that later played in the NBA, is now an assistant coach with Memphis. But the most of the guys that I had all played overseas. If they were any good at all, they played overseas. Mm-hmm. I can remember at Missouri State that we would have all of our seniors would have the opportunity to play overseas. And you're right. Some of them don't go because they couldn't find it on a map. They've never been out of the United States. They're scared to death. And, mm-hmm. But at the same time, I will say this, because the basketball game has gone so global and the money is so much better, regardless, not only in the United States, but also worldwide, these college players now have figured it out. There's a player at Kansas that came back and talked to all of our players. I won't tell you who his name was, but I remember he told the guys, I could come back and I could make the league minimum in the NBA. But why would I want to do that? I'm making $1.5 million overseas, tax-free, and it doesn't make any sense. So I finally got mature enough that I decided what I need to do is I need to make money as much as I can while I can and at the age that I am. And I'm not going to let, I'm going to check my ego in, and I'm not going to let my ego drive me back to a league minimum salary when I can do this at $1.5 million and have the opportunity to play for a long time.
Yeah, you mentioned educating fans. I think that's another case. Like, fans don't realize if you play pro in Europe, it's actually a very good lifestyle in most cases, as opposed to being the third, you know, the 13th guy in the Thunder, which is not as great of a situation as it appears at face value. I've seen that a lot. I'm a UConn guy. I'm out here, and we've, you know, with all the women's basketball recruit, like, all the great players, they didn't go overseas to Russia because they wanted to see St. Petersburg. It's because they were getting paid 5 and 6 times what they were going to get paid in the WNBA. That's how they made a living. Your new role, though, you talk about educating yourself. It's hard for fans. Even I'm reading over one of the releases from when you got hired, and there are so many abbreviations in this thing. It's like a chapter. Where do you even start learning? Because it's all so new, and I know there's a million collectives. How do you educate yourself on, like, are you just trying to feel all these different collectives out and see who's got what fits? Or is it just, you know, you're Oklahoma State, you're going to be in with everybody?
It took me 24 hours. I got this fly flying around. So if it lands on my forehead, don't call me Mike Pence. Because I don't want you to get confused with this white hair and this fly. But, you know, guys, within 24 hours of taking the NIL job, I figured this out. It didn't take me long to figure it out. There are so many sharks in the water right now, and they're only out there for blood. I cannot tell you how many emails, phone calls that I receive on a daily basis that say, we are so much there for the student athlete, and we want to do this, and we want to help them, and we want to do this, but we're only going to charge them 35%. It just drives me nuts. So one of the byproducts of being an NIL director as a former head coach, you have that mama bear, papa bear mentality that you're not going to let anybody hurt your athletes. I'm not limited to 13 men's basketball players now. Now I'm with over 500 student athletes that I get to do. But the greatest selling point for an NIL to me is the first thing that I look at other people when I visit with them. The first things out of my mouth when I sit down in a meeting is say, how can we make you more money? Period. Yeah. Not the student athlete, but you. How can we make you more money? And when you flip it on them like that, now all of a sudden their ear goes up, because if you come in with your hand out, you've already lost them. And if you read the press release, if you read any article by that's talked about me, they just wrote an article a couple of days ago in the Daily Oklahoman. And the one thing that I told them, I do not tell anybody no. Mm-hmm. Under no regards. I've already had the opportunity to sell 4 floor seat tickets. I've had an opportunity to make a deal for Learfield Sports. I had a lady tell me that her husband was in the School of Engineering and she doesn't really want to give to sports. And I said, well, let's give to the School of Engineering. I am not going to tell you no. And there's so many things out there that, you know, there's so many stories. This kid's getting $1 million. There's so much fluff going on out there. You've got universities that are basically saying they're counting the room, books, board, tuition, and they're putting all this together and they're telling the kid that's what they're going to offer. Well, you know, when you put all that together, if you're at a Power 5 conference, you're anywhere from $150,000 to $225,000 a year. And if you throw in a private institution with the cost of attendance, such as a Northwestern, you're going to be in the range of $250,000 to $300,000 a year. Holy Moses, if you go to West Point, a West Point education or an Ivy League education, all of those numbers are escalated as well. But the one great thing about the NIL that I have discovered as a father of 2 daughters and a granddaughter that is 7 months old, that her first name is Henson. That's pretty doggone good right there.
Yeah,
Henson Riley Travis. It gives me an opportunity to fight for these young ladies. They don't have the same opportunity as the young men to go pro. Yeah. They do have an opportunity right now to have an opportunity to sign an NIL deal. And the greatest thing that you can sell on your campus right now are really these young female athletes, because they embrace the NIL. They want to work it. They want to get after it. We've got a girl on our campus right now that has over 500,000 followers on TikTok. 500,000. She's got 12,000 followers on Twitter and 125,000 followers on Instagram. I've been on Twitter since 2012. Now, I really didn't get active until the last 3 or 4 years. But since 2012, I haven't even made 7,000 followers yet. This girl's been on Twitter 1 year. So she's really popular. And to be honest, she's a lot better looking than I am. And she can dance a lot better than what I could if I ever got on TikTok.
If I tried to dance on TikTok, I'd lose followers. I do have to ask this, Barry. Does your wife follow you on Twitter? Because yeah, some of those tweets are great.
She does. Yeah, and guys, let me tell you this. My wife follows me on Twitter, and my credit card statement at the end of every month really validates that she watches what I say on Twitter. So it's not a give and take. It's a lot of take. It's not as much give, but it's a – I tell you what, it's a shitload of taking. I tell you that right now.
A question for you, because before you moved to the NIL role, you were at Oklahoma State as a basketball analyst. How difficult was that? Because you were obviously close to Coach Boynton last year, knowing, I mean, it's been like a sword hanging over that program for a couple of years, and then finding out basically what, wasn't it like opening night, no NCAA tournament this year. How they got through that last year, what was that, had to be a very tough experience, because I was really impressed with how well they played, given they, you know, there's quote unquote, there was nothing on the line, but it was an exceptional defensive team. And I was just really impressed. What was that like? I mean, you've been through a lot, and you know, I can't imagine what it was like having to get those kids up last year with what they had.
You're just like everybody else. It's one of the greatest coaching jobs that I've ever witnessed. And I've been doing this a long time. I started my 42nd year this year, my 30th year in Division I athletics. As I told you, I've only worked for two guys, and both of them are incredible. But what Mike Boynton did last year with the Oklahoma State Cowboys and keeping those guys, I mean, vested in what we need to do. I saw two things that were impressive last year. The two things that I saw that were very impressive is we got our asses kicked two games in a row on the road, and went in and beat Baylor, number one in the country, on the road for our third game on the road within 10 days, and went in and beat the number one team in the country. And also the other thing is, like we talked about, to keep those guys invested in the entire season, to play for pride, play for tradition, to play for those who have come before us. I thought that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And to top it off and to win on senior night, and to beat Texas Tech and to do those things, I just think it speaks multitudes of the great job that Coach Boynton did. And it also, you know, it relishes the fact that no matter how bad and how distasteful the NCAA's decision was, over $300 paid to an athlete, you guys kind of got me going there.
Yeah, but now NIL. You know, now it's all good, right?
Now we're good. Hey, it's okay.
It's amazing how it all changed on a dime, but at all surely because of the NCAA's great involvement. Chad, I don't want to.
My tongue is bleeding right now to try and not go on a rant on NCAA enforcement stuff, but
you can allow me to go on a rant. I've had pretty good practice at it. We could probably get into another one.
Punishing different people 6 years later. Way to go. Over $300.
I just realized we have a magical moment this year. Will we have Barry Hinson and Greg Campy in the same building at the same time this year? Because that is a meeting. Because Oklahoma State has Oakland on the schedule. And that is hitting all of my favorites there.
But Campy is one of my all-time favorite guys. Our days go back to the MidCon. And the thing about Campy is we did a 2-for-1, and Campy's already won both games. We're going to go to Oakland this year. So we're going to go to the Blacktop. You know,
you're going to the Blacktop?
You're going to the Blacktop, not Little Caesars. I have so much respect for Oklahoma State doing that. That is – a lot. None of this BS. I know you're probably friends with Izzo too. None of this BS. Oh, Michigan State played at Oakland, and then they show up in Detroit, and it's 18,000 people in green. No, you're going to the Blacktop. You have my eternal respect. That is That takes some stuff. Do you have a Greg Campy story you can share? I love him.
I think that one of the best things is that I went against Campy straight up with a kid out of Chicago and recruited. And this kid was a phenomenal 3-point shooter. And we lost him because Campy told him straight up, this was according to the kid's father, I'm not really concerned about how much defense you play. And I promise you, you will never have to ever shoot a 2-point field goal. And that's how I lost this kid. And he had a kid, if you'll remember right, he had a kid that played for him that year that never shot a layup, never shot a shot inside the arc. There were teams that were making him go backdoor, overplaying him. All this, the kid would just hover around the arc. Never shot a two the entire season. But that's Campy. He's brilliant. He really is. He's brilliant. He's done a wonderful job. His teams are hard to play against. They've always been well coached. And for a guy to stay that long at any place is an unbelievable asset to any community that they've had him that long.
So what do you think about Oklahoma State's basketball team for this upcoming season? Now that all the NCAA nonsense is behind us, you think you guys have a solid tournament team there? Or?
I do. I'm really impressed. We had a great, before I took the NIL job, you know, I was at every workout throughout the summer and the practices and stuff. We'll be as athletic or more athletic than we've ever been in the history of the program. We'll have more length. We'll look, with the exception of maybe the point guard slot, we'll look like an NBA team. Our 2 through 5s will have unbelievable length to them. We've got great skill level that's coming back with Bryce Thompson and Avery Anderson, but probably with Tyreek and Musa Cisse and Caleb Boone, all those guys in the mix of the three big guys, you know, we really feel good about that. And we brought some good guys in from the portal that were mature guys, guys that played the tournament or played in championships or were the best player on their team at the mid-major level. And we had decided, I thought one of the things that Coach did that was pretty brilliant, we really looked at the transfer portal with mid-majors this year because of their chip on their shoulder. We passed a few guys at the Power Fives from the portals because we felt like, mainly driven by our assistants and Coach Boynton, that if you got a guy from the mid-major, he'd have a chip on his shoulder. He wouldn't have a sense of entitlement, and he would be a lot harder playing, you know, like a hard-rocking dude, as Coach Self used to say. And I do think that's a great philosophy. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out this year.
Yeah, I know. I'm very interested. I'm a UConn guy. That's a hell of a matchup because UConn basically largely did the same thing. They're very similar. The point guard's a huge question mark, but that's good. I'm excited for that game up because it's up here. But I've told people, like, what's Oklahoma State like? They didn't make the tournament last year. I'm like, don't ask. But they are going to be the hungriest team in the country because those kids are pissed, and they're right to be. And I tell people, I'm like, what if I told you they couldn't make the tournament last year and they still screwed around and beat Baylor and Texas Tech? And now everyone appears terrified. I'm like, you should be. They're really good.
Yeah, so I think they have a chance. I'm a UConn fan, by the way, UConn women's fan, because Andrea Hootie is the strength and conditioning coach. And I had a chance to work with Andrea at Kansas. And so just because of her, I'm a UConn women's fan right now.
It's everybody up here. We're still in, you know, people think the UK is in a period of mourning. That pales to what this state's like after Paige's injury. I mean, there's bunting everywhere. I'm not allowed to, you know, go into a church. It's crazy. No, they're still going to be all right.
You know what's great about that is if Paige is on TV, I watch her because I had the opportunity to coach at Southwest Missouri State and watch, if not the greatest, one of the greatest in Jackie Stiles.
Yeah, Jackie.
And she just had a movie come out I just want to, hey, I just want to throw it out here. I don't know how many guys you've had on this podcast that have actually starred in a movie before, but, that's on my resume now. So I'm in a movie now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
Checks a box. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's on Amazon Prime. I think you have to pay like 47 cents to watch it. But, yeah, it's, yeah. I'm a movie star.
We're going to get those residual checks going for Coach Houston.
Those are... I'm just hoping it leads me to another role. Maybe some portly old guy that's a mafia guy with a southern accent.
Yeah, I've tried out for some of those roles. I've never been picked. Yeah. Not intimidating enough.
It's hard. They need a lower
hat. I'll tell you, I got a very important question, though. When you were at Southern Illinois, you were marketing your barbecue sauce. We bought a bottle. We had it here on our podcast back then. Is it coming back?
It is coming back. It's funny you guys say that. Do you guys remember what was said at the bottom of the bottle of the sauce? Do you remember that? The line?
Oh, I had it, you know.
I just remember the commercial a lot.
The ad was,
you put it on your cauliflower.
The bottom line said, if this ain't the best barbecue sauce you ever had, you're a liar.
I got to say, I think it was just it was way up there. It was really good. I was through that bottle in very fast.
So
we sold out four times at Southern Illinois. What was great about it? It was my sauce, and we made 0.00 off of it because we donated every bit of the funds back to SIU Athletic Academy.
That's great.
We're going to do something similar to that now. I'm getting ready to start it up again, and we're going to do something like that again.
Okay, that's great.
You're late. You're in Oklahoma State. It's football season. I expect to see you out at Boone Pickens just tossing the stuff.
Tossing bottles of sauce. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
what are we doing?
Yeah. Coach, one of the things that's happening up to the college basketball landscape, or really all of college athletics, is conference realignment. It's nothing new. We've seen it before. We've seen it in your conference. Some of the old classic Big Eight rivalries, Kansas and Missouri, went away. It's sort of back, but it's not the same. What's going to happen to Bedlam? Because that is a gem. I don't think people outside the state of Oklahoma realize what a great college rivalry that is. When you sell out your women's soccer game, you might have a rivalry. Are they going to keep it going?
If it were left up to Barry Henson, the NIL director and former Yoda on the men's basketball staff, we would play Oklahoma every year.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it's good for the state of Oklahoma. It's good to have a natural rivalry. If I told you that Duke and North Carolina were not going to play anymore, I think it would just be a travesty. And I hope that we will continue to do that. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. When Missouri stopped playing Kansas, and they're back to playing a little bit now, but I can't tell, in the 4 years that I was there, the loudest I've ever heard it and it's ever been is when we beat Missouri in the last game of the Big 12 season that year. And it was, I mean, I literally had a headache from it, but college basketball, college football, college sports, they need that. You're right. Whether it's women's basketball, whether it's track, whether it's golf, it's just such a great rivalry. And I just certainly hope that we don't do that. You have to be able to put on your big girl and your big boy pants, and you have to be able to check your egos in the side and just say, we're going to continue this unbelievable state tradition that we've had forever. I mean, this is a young state. We just became a state in 1907. We had colleges before we even became a state. So in order for that to go away, I think is a travesty, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to do so.
Yeah, I would hate to see it go away. I've hated to see some of the rivalries that have gone away go away. West Virginia Pitt, although that's sort of back. I never thought Kansas and Missouri would not play until they didn't. And if it can happen to that one, it can happen to any of them.
Yeah, and I think what you guys said, you know, we talked about this earlier at the Power Fives. We talked about the almighty dollar. The one thing that's going on with conference realignment, and now that the Big Ten has settled their TV rights and stuff, I think we're next up. I think there's a race between the Pac-12 and the Big 12 going on right now. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I really like our new conference commissioner. He has been to every campus. He's taken all the campus tours. He's visited with every staff. But I can just tell you, when he visited Oklahoma State and visited our athletic department, he was Lou Gehrig. He made big hits throughout the entire speech. I think he is an outside-the-box thinker. I think he's a breath of fresh air. I don't think anybody's going to sneak up on him or get him caught sleeping on the job. I think this guy is pretty doggone special, and I really feel good about where the Big 12 is, not only now, but where we are going in the future.
Yeah, you've got in there. Well, you got Houston, Cincinnati, BYU coming in here next year. And yeah. What are your real thoughts on what were just the craziness of what we're seeing in the realignment, though? I mean, we now are going to be living in a world where UCLA and Rutgers are in the same conference. It's just I can't figure this out.
Well, you know, nobody can, but I think that's one of the things that Mr. Yormark said when he came here. He said, you have to think past. We're gone from the days of regional. Those days are over.
I loved those days.
You know, and I did too. But if you expand on this a little bit and you allow your mind to adapt, the opportunity to have let's say that Oklahoma State goes out and plays Washington or Oregon or Arizona State, and the opportunity for your fans to go there and to create somewhat of a regional rivalry that's out of your region would be really kind of neat. So when you cover all of the time zones, sock puppet, come back.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh,
he took a dive. I know. One thing that's over on a podcast is to give CPR to a dang sock puppet.
Well, they do not want to perform mouth to mouth. They'd rather just.
We can't let that happen.
If I ever keel over, I'm dead.
Yeah. Well, that's what my wife has said about me often after my tweets. But one of the things, if you can get into the time zones of every slot from morning to middle afternoon to late afternoon to evening to late evening, if you've got those slots covered for your conference, I think that's brilliant, out-of-the-box thinking, and we'll see how it goes. But you better get ready, guys, because that's where we're headed.
I know that's where the future is, Coach, but I just want to briefly go to the past with you. You're Oklahoma State 83. Can you talk about what it was like watching the Big Eight back then with just some absolutely terrifyingly good basketball teams back then? I mean, Wayman, I know it's the other side, but Wayman Tisdale pretty good. I mean, those teams back in the old Big Eight days, what that was like.
I loved I loved it. Conference. Mitch Richmond. Yeah. Comes to mind. You talk about Wayman Tisdale's. I think he's the greatest college basketball player that I ever saw live. Softest hands of anybody I've ever seen. Put him on the block, throw it to him, fall away, turn around. Doesn't matter what he did. But the greatest thing that Wayman Tisdale did, he raised the level of sport just with that smile, running down the floor with a big smile. That's hard for an old cowboy to say. But look at all the legends that coached in this league in the Big Eight. You got to go back to Roy Williams. You got to go back to Norm Stewart, one of my favorite guys of all time. And he just absolutely hated Kansas. He wouldn't spend a dime in Kansas. They'd stay on the Missouri side when they played in Kansas City. They'd drive over. You talk about Billy Tubbs, which was an unbelievable. And how about Johnny Orr? You know, they're playing the theme that the Tonight Show when he comes out and he takes a golf swing. I mean, and you talk about the guys at K-State. You know, I coached against Dana Altman for a long time at Creighton in the Missouri Valley. What a great job he did. And, you know, there were just lots of guys that had great, great character about him. Yeah. And I'm not talking about characters as far as good. They were just characters on the floor and just absolutely loved every bit of it. But I love the Big Eight, and it was really fun.
And I know as a Polk class of 83, if I tell you Mizzou at Kemper Arena, two OTs, that's got to be a memory that you – I mean, that was
– Well, Mizzou had my favorite player, other than Wayman, was John Sunvold. And he's probably one of the best guards I ever saw. And John did a TV game for us last year. And I've known John for a long time, and I've known his brother Bob. But we talked about it. And he loved playing at Gallagher. At that time, it was Gallagher. And we did not have the expansion at that time. So there were 6,800 people right on top of you. Yeah. At the best, I'm going to give you two great stories for Gallagher and back in the days of the Big Eight. One of the greatest things I've ever seen, Steve Stepanovich accidentally shot himself one summer in the leg while he played at Mizzou. Accidentally shot himself. So when I went to school at Oklahoma State, sitting in the stands and part of the student body, we all brought cap guns. No. Real cap guns. Can you fathom bringing a cap gun into an arena day? And every time Stepanovich would shoot free throws, people would shoot the cap guns off. It was just, it was great. And, you know, we had the Antlers at Missouri that was just unbelievable. But, you know, Stepanovich was a great story. And then I guess the other greatest story that I've ever seen is OU had a wrestler named Dr. Death. And I say wrestler. My brother and I wrestled. We never wrestled in our life. We always wrestled. But we pinned Dr. Death to win the match at really no chance in the world this kid could do it. Pinned him, and it was so loud. This is not one of those things. This is documented. The light bulbs busted. They burst right there in Gallagher, and it's probably the two greatest stories that I saw Big Country hit a three to send Mizzou back into overtime. And I saw in my time period, Eddie Halfcourt Hannon hit a half-court shot to beat Louisville the year after they won the national championship. And then to anything to do wrestling in that arena was unbelievable. Then Andrea Riley was probably the fastest little girl I've ever seen in women's basketball. And she would get the mic and she would just go beep, beep like Roadrunner because she was so funny and so fast. So we had some great, great tradition there.
I did not realize that Louisville half-court shot was played in Gallagher, Iowa. I know the game. I'm familiar with it. I didn't realize that's where it was. Wow.
Eddie Halfcourt Hannon. That's one of the greatest. And I remember Louisville had a kid named Wiley that had four fingers.
Wiley brought – he actually played for the Philadelphia Eagles, had never played a football game in his life. But,
He should have. He looked like a Greek god. He should have. You know, he's one of those guys that, yes, he could. He was like Armand Gates or Antonio Gates. I played against Antonio when he was at Kent State, and I knew at that time it didn't take me long to figure out he's going to be a really good football player. And it was during college basketball game.
It's amazing how they keep the NFL teams keep trying to do that. They keep chasing that, and they don't realize that this was a special case. Like, there's a couple that have worked, but there are a couple that they try and sell it, and it's like it's the last sign of an NFL team's losing any creativity when they just go, "Oh, we'll just get a college basketball game."
Well, Barry, I do appreciate you coming on today. I know taking up some of your time, and hope your wife isn't mad at us for taking up your time this evening.
Guys, anytime that you can take me away from my wife, she's the happiest woman on the face of the earth. So she loves me being occupied and not being a horse around. She's probably in there watching the tape version of Housewives or something, and or Survivor. That's her new deal. Big Brother, Survivor, and Housewives. If those shows are going on, there's no communication going on in our house.
Coach,
please come to Connecticut for the UConn-Oklahoma State game. It would be an honor to have you in the building. I don't care about anything on the court.
Right. Well, Coach, guys, I know this is.
I've had a lot of bucket list things, but I'm going to be able to check off doing a podcast with a sock puppet.
There you go.
Officially checked off the box now. And if I die tonight, I will die a happy sock puppet.
All right. Well, Coach, like, thanks for doing this. In all seriousness, I know this is kind of backhanded coming from a sock puppet. I think you're great for the game. I think you're great for college athletics. I always hope there's a spot for you there as long as you want to be there. And that was evident in the podcast today, just listening to you talk about how you work as the NIL and how you really are there for the student athletes. I've never not thought that about you.
Well, I appreciate it.
About them.
This game has been good to me. It's allowed me to work for 42 years, and I'm going to try to work until hopefully the day I die. And I love Oklahoma State, and I love student athletes, and I certainly love the game of basketball. So you guys have given me an avenue to talk about it. I appreciate you, and hopefully we can do this sometime again.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thanks everybody for watching and joining us this evening. And we'll be back again with more Hoops HD content real soon.